Good morning, everyone. That was horrible. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
All right, that was much better. That was much better. I'm Jamal Miller. I have the honor of leading California's Office of Health Equity within the State Department of Public Health. And I have a lot of slides that I will get to all of them in a tight time frame of 20 minutes. But I would like to start out by kind of putting some folks on the spot, just giving some brief shout-outs. I have two of our team members in the Office of Health Equity who are here. We have my colleague here, Dr. Tamu Nolfo, on the front row here, who's an executive consultant to our office, who has really been instrumental in driving the health equity strategic plan that I'm going to share with you later. And then we have my colleague and team member, Meredith Lee, who is an instrumental part of our Health and All Policies team that facilitates our Health and All Policies task force. And I'll get to that later as well. And he probably didn't think I saw him, but I see one of our stakeholder partners in the back, Ruben Cantu from CPAN, the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network, which has been one of our critical partners in our mental health, multicultural disparities work that I'll be talking about as well. And we have some of our partners from CMA, the California Medical Association Foundation, in the room. And that's just kind of giving some brief shout-outs. So let's go right into what I want to share. And what I like to do when I present is level set around and define the terms that you're going to be hearing before we get into the thick of presentation, because it varies from state to state, from community to community. And this is language directly out of the Health and Safety Code that creates our office. I'm not going to read every definition here. I'll talk later about the determinants of equity, or we call them the social determinants of health. That's quite familiar to you. But often people ask me, what is the Office of Health Equity about? People that don't know about health equity or disparities in inequities work, they're like, do you do health care financing or something like that? Because they see equity. But health equity is what? It's efforts to ensure that all people have full and equal access to opportunities that enable them to lead healthy lives. What are health and mental health disparities? And I'll talk later around why we explicitly are calling out mental health and not just wrapping it into health categorically. These disparities are differences in health and mental health status among distinct segments of the population, including differences that occur by gender, age, race or ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, education or income, disability or functional impairment, or geographic location or a combination of any of these. Disparities in and of themselves are not necessarily bad. They're differences. They become bad when they turn into inequities, and that's the narrative we're trying to shift to consistently in the state of California, talking about health and mental health inequities. And these are disparities in health or mental health, or the factors that shape health that are systemic and avoidable and therefore considered unjust or unfair. And what I really like about the vulnerable communities definition is that our Office of Health Equity was intentionally called the Office of Health Equity, because when you look at who the vulnerable communities are, it's much more expansive and inclusive, and it's not just limited to communities of color, which is critical to making this issue of health equity more relevant to others than just us in the room who have moral concern and interest in this subject matter. And I'll talk more about that later. But it's pretty expansive and inclusive and leaves none of us untouched. Vulnerable communities it includes, but it's not limited to women, racial or ethnic groups, low-income individuals and families, individuals who are incarcerated and those who have been incarcerated, individuals with disabilities, individuals with mental health conditions, children, youth, and young adults, seniors, immigrants, and refugees, individuals with limited English proficiency, and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities, or a combination of these populations. So based on this definition, we can all raise our hand with respect to potentially coming from vulnerable communities or vulnerable populations. And then you layer on some of the challenges that may be associated with coming from a vulnerable place when we think about the healthography tag that's tied to this conference. So one of the challenges that we have is within our the statute that creates our office, we are required to do regular reports and profiles and statistics to objectively show and demonstrate what the state of inequities
is in the state of California. So I call this slide, just to go downstream to start, I call this the stair steps. Really, you look at the difference between Asian Americans and African Americans in that life expectancy. And I had a meeting a few weeks ago with Measure of America that does this annual or biannual report on the portrait. They call it the Portrait of California. And based on that meeting, they shared that in this unreleased report that an Asian American baby born today in California is expected to live, to outlive an African American baby born the same day by more than 11 years. So we have an opportunity to get flat. And we don't want to get flat by bringing the highest down. We want to elevate those who are on the lowest levels. When I engage people who don't necessarily understand this work, or they feel that they're not connected to it and it's not important, I like to share with them the objective economic case driving why health equity is so, so important. The Joint Center on Political and Economic Studies did a study between 2003, looking at data between 2003 and 2006, we see the combined cost of health inequalities and premature death, they cost the country well over $1 trillion. And when you look specifically at opportunities around eliminating health disparities for minorities during that same period of time and the direct medical expenditures, it was roughly $230 billion between that three-year time period. So when we start to objectively look at numbers, an economic stimulus package opportunity, if you will, it's information like this that we have to do a more intentional and better job at integrating what are the economic implications. And particularly in California, when you think now 72% of those 18 years or younger are people of color in the state of California today. But when we look demographically, our state is already a majority a state of people of color. And the importance of that is we have what's called here by PolicyLink, a recent report that they released, an equity-driven model opportunity. Once again, changing the narrative by which we engage people around why health equity is so important. So looking at the demographics, here's where we are today. Latinos are projected to become the largest racial or ethnic group and will account for nearly half of Californians by 2060. And then you just look across the different racial or ethnic categories. And we have a huge variation in how we look at data. So there's some data where you have fully aggregated groups that we can't disaggregate. So when you look at numbers for like the Asian community, if we disaggregate that, you're going to see a lot of variation. And there's unfortunately a lot of inconsistency in the data resources that we use, but we're trying to do a much better job at that. But this gives you an idea of how we're looking at data demographically. When you look at within the traditional healthcare system, the providers of care, when we look at the physicians, active physicians versus the California population demographic, and there's an imbalance, there's a mismatch when we think about having a culturally competent workforce that's either intellectually or demographically representative of those that they're serving. We also like to look at data by other determinants, particularly by income level. And you'll see here that it's pretty flat when we look at people who have ever been diagnosed with heart disease. But then you look at the inconsistency between the poorest and the wealthiest with respect to those who were given or provided a health disease management plan. There's a huge difference that you see there based on income level. When you look here at preventive measures around mammogram or pap test, once again, looking at income level disparities between pap test, mammogram, the poorer you are, you know, the higher incidence that you had of likely not having the opportunity to have been tested for either mammogram or pap. If you look here, once again, you see numbers that are dropping when we look at the percentage of kindergarten students, that have reported immunization rates, but the gaps persist, and you see that at every age point, African-American kindergartners are reported to have the lowest immunization rate, these consistencies. And I'm giving you traditional statistics just to frame what's going on in California, and we're going to go upstream shortly. Once again, these differences that we see them nationally, but just giving you a California flavor. So it's almost sacrilegious for me to say this because I have 16 years in healthcare and hospital systems. But care is extremely important, but it's far more than care, which is, and I'm sharing this, singing to the choir, people who understand this. It's much more than care. When we get people care and coverage, and we kind of triage them and get them to a place of health and wellness, and they're discharged from a hospital or they leave with a script from a doctor's office, the question is, are they going back to a 90% vulnerable situation where they live, learn, work, play, and pray? Because that's going to continue to perpetuate this broken healthcare system that's driven by volume that will be to some extent mitigated by the Affordable Care Act. But our focus in the Office of Health Equity is really aligning once again with the social determinants of health at 90%. And I often get in trouble with this slide because that behaviors is the big 40% driver of health. But the huge framework and the context by which our behaviors are predicated is primarily driven by that 20%. What options do you have from an environmental and social factors perspective? And that's critical. So we have the definition of social determinants of health. This is where we want to go. But that's very academic to engage people such as policymakers, and particularly in our space, who are going to help us move the dial. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation did an excellent study and focus groups on research on communicating in a far more effective way to reach those beyond this room who play a critical role in the policies and decisions that drive health. So the World Health Organization, their definition around being where we're born, grow, live, work, and age, very academic. Still, you know, step in the right direction. But as I said before, health starts where we live, learn, work, play, pray. I took that language from this report, and we're starting to integrate that on a regular basis when we meet with key stakeholders who are going to help us drive the agenda. And what are these social determinants of health? Once again, this is language that comes out of the Health and Safety Code that creates the Office of Health Equity. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with these indicators. And the importance of this is our demographic analyses or our disparities report that we're required by law to produce has to align with these key indicators. So I shared before the traditional statistics that we see in care, coverage, and prevention, but I'll give you some place-based examples that coincide with social determinants of health. Right in Sacramento, where I live, where I grew up, you have communities that share a border, that share from a numbers perspective a similar number of residents. But it's the difference between the haves and the have-nots on display in East Sacramento versus Oak Park. In 2010, Oak Park residents are more than three times as likely to go to the emergency room for asthma, diabetes, or high blood pressure. Which picture do you think is Oak Park? It pretty much gives you a variety of, like, the intersection of built environment. You have to ask yourself, what's the future going to be like of this young baby that's being held by this mother? If your doctor sends you back home to say, hey, I need you to walk five times a week, 30 minutes a day, like, really? I've got grass on my sidewalk. You know, my built environment is not necessarily conducive to that. The Tale of Two Cities, Marin County, if not the healthiest and wealthiest, is up there. County, not only in the state, but across the country. But you have some interesting dynamics. First and foremost, when you look at what's happening in Marin City, if you look in your lower left-hand corner, life expectancy in Marin City is 78.6. If you jump over to the right-hand side, the Ross suburb, that's where like Sean Penn and others say, I would love to live in Ross, so I'm not hating on it. But if you look at the difference in life expectancy, something is wrong with that within the same county. There's a huge issue. So we drill down on what's going on in Marin City. You have over 2,500 people that live there. 63% of them are African-American people that are living in poverty. You have seven schools. You have zero public parks. You have zero farmers markets. You have no supermarkets. You have four fast food outlets. And you have two other food sources. And I took a site visit there. You can actually buy a steak at the Dollar Tree in Marin City. I'm like, that's a joke. You know, like, really? Like, who wants a steak there? But it speaks to some of the challenges that are happening, once again, right in our state. And it's not to, you know, paint a picture of discouragement, but it's to show where the opportunities are, because what I don't have here is the collective impact approach that this community has engaged in to where they are facing these challenges in a multi-sectoral, you know, comprehensive way to say this is the reality, but we're not discouraged. You know, we're going to rebound and show some resilience, and we're going to be partners in helping to build that capacity. We also have a climate change team. So we're looking closely at how can we be better environmental stewards and how can we drive that agenda within the administration. This is out of L.A. County, the hot spots. The red spots, that's not good when we think about climate change, population vulnerability. More African Americans and Latinos in these particular areas, they live in high-risk areas compared to whites, and average incomes are about 40% lower. But you can take climate change vulnerability out. Let's do dropout rates. Let's do violence. Let's do poverty. Let's do many of the other indicators. It's going to be the same hotspots layered on the same communities and the same people. And when you look at that picture, it creates a very toxic, very stressful, very challenging situation. So it totally makes sense when we think back to the stair steps, why people are literally dying earlier than prematurely. I took this from the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, one of our other partners that we're engaged with in our cross-sectoral approach to achieving health equity. You see the positive correlation for the most part. The wealthier a county is, the longer its inhabitants live. And there's some diversity here, but you see the trajectory. So household wealth, when we think about income as a social determinant of health, it's key. You look at the demographic comparison here. So you see the green bar is just general households by race and ethnicity. Then you look at household wealth. So you look at the far left column where you have whites that are 51, almost 52% of the demographic in the state. And then you look at having almost 70% of the wealth. You see an uneven distribution. 25% of our children, on average across the state, are living in poverty in the state of California. And one in three adults is eligible for our Medicaid program or our Medi-Cal program, to give you kind of an idea. But when you drill down in certain parts of our state, the Central Valley, or if you go in back into Marin City or certain places, the numbers are actually higher than this. So it gives you kind of an idea of where we are from an income security perspective. Income security is so fascinating for me. When we think about going upstream in the life course and not just in systems, this study, which fascinated me, that University of Colorado, Denver, recently reported, it basically showed that mothers who were income insecure or poor were extremely stressed and biologically had elevated cortisol levels. But the fascinating part was that was they drew the cortisol levels from the baby, whether it's full term or prematurely born, and the baby is coming into the world with elevated cortisol levels. So the exposure starts even earlier than where we've been tackling. So we're using that information to really look at how it's so important from a health, mental health perspective. How can we really go upstream in the life course to inform our work in the Office of Health Equity and within the State Department of Public Health? So if you look at income challenges connected directly to your capacity to either rent or to own, if you look at preschool, educational attainment as a key indicator, more than half of the children in California ages 3 to 4 do not attend preschool. It's key. You look at reading levels, where Asian and white third graders are outperforming any of the other groups. These are kind of the keys to our later life successes. The impact that trauma and violence is having on our communities is critical. And we look at the relative comparison. So some 3,500 American troops were killed during the 8-year war in Iraq within the same time period. And this could be Oakland, this could be Los Angeles, this could be, East Palo Alto and others. But if you look at Philadelphia during that same time period, over 3,100 deaths. When you look at this 10-year period, based on FBI data in Chicago, you look at the homicide numbers, 3 times the number of Americans killed in action in Afghanistan. And the trauma and violence, the impact that it has on these communities, when we look at the prevalence of trauma and violence, we've got to integrate that better into our framework, and our office is taking the lead on that. So many of you are familiar with the Barhi public health framework. So we put a nice spin on it, had it, polished and put a nice graphic design on it. We're really positioning ourselves, as I said, to go upstream. How do we transform living conditions, institutional inequities, social inequities? And also understanding that healthy people come from healthy communities, come from healthy environments, and intersect uniquely at different ways with those social determinants of health. So enters the Office of Health Equity, created through Assembly Bill 1467 in 2010. I'm the first deputy director, had the honor of being appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state senate. I'm the only deputy director within the State Department of Public Health that required state confirmation, and it was grueling, but I'm grateful that it had the opportunity for me to share with the Senate Rules Committee why this work is so important, and it elevates our Office of Health Equity. It's not about me, but it elevates our office at a level to where I report to Dr. Chapman, who's our state health officer. We're not kind of in the bowels of the State Department of Public Health. And through our health and all policies work, we're able to work across the administration and various government entities. So we're elevating the State Department of Public Health. This is the structure. We have about 20 or so staff, and we're growing. We have contracted staff through our Public Health Institute, just to give you some organizational structures. Our stakeholder engagement is something critical that is key to advancing our agenda. So as a result, we have an Office of Health Equity Advisory Committee that consists of public health, mental health experts, consumers, homelessness advocates, and many others that make up a diverse array of people that inform our office. And as a result of that, we came up with California's statewide, first ever statewide plan to promote health and mental health equity. We have our vision established, our mission, and what you'll see consistently throughout, even when we get to the central challenge, which is to mobilize understanding and sustained commitment to eliminate health inequity and improve the health, mental health, and well-being of all. What you'll see is mental health consistently called out. We're very explicit about that, to integrate that into our work. At a high level, this is what our strategic plan is focused on. It's more about quality versus quantity for us. So we need to assess internally what's happening within CDPH across the 200 some odd programs, to where how can we create more health equity ambassadors, to where the Office of Health Equity work or health equity work isn't just what we do over in that office, but we operationalize it throughout the Office of Health Equity. We operationalize it throughout CDPH. We operationalize it through our interagency agreement where we have with the Department of Healthcare Services that administers our Medicaid program. We operationalize it through the Health and Human Services Agency with the newly created Health Equity Roundtable. We're going to be creating it in the beginning of 2015. And then we operationalize it further with our Health and All Policies Task Force. And then that infrastructure, that's like inside government. We haven't even got to what it is that we need to assess and evaluate and connecting the dots with local health jurisdictions, with local communities and such. We've got to communicate better, be more competitive and aggressive around how we are positioning our public health and health equity messaging for key audiences that can help advance our agenda. And how are we leveraging the rich data, making it more interactive? Having a website that pops. I mean, we're in California. Silicon Valley's not too far. It's like we got to have something more attractive. I want you to be able to drop health equity in that search engine, and the California Office of Health Equity comes up because our data is that good. And infrastructure, how are we driving policy? How are we investing and allocating our dollars in a meaningful way and in a sustainable way? And how are we doing that across these three unique groups of key stakeholders that we have on our way to eliminating health and mental health? And what we want to do is not from a top-down perspective. We want to be good partners so we can drive capacity building and implementation on the local level. Just two quick highlights and I'm done. We have $60 million from Proposition 63 that we're investing over the next 4 years into multicultural mental health disparities. And it's not just the traditional sense. It's addressing stigma, it's addressing discrimination, and having years and decades of local mental health departments underserving or inappropriately serving these communities. But as we talked about, when we go upstream and see how mental health, you know, public health, all of this is uniquely integrated, we see our California Reducing Disparities Project and investing in community-defined practices that work, that are culturally competent, that are culturally and linguistically appropriate, and they're serving communities that are in need across these five groups: African-American, Latino, API, Native American, and LGBTQ. And we're going to heavily evaluate the effectiveness of these efforts to demonstrate that they work so that we can hardwire and build those into our various systems. Here are some of our partners from throughout various communities in the state who bring expertise. As I mentioned, one of our technical partners from CPEN, Ruben, has played an instrumental role in bringing these partners together to drive our strategic plan for this particular effort. And we're really excited about leveraging this $60 million, but that's just a drop in the bucket. And we're going to do everything we can to like ante that up so we can once again hardwire these efforts. We have 22 members of our California Health and All Policies Task Force. That effort started in 2010, reports to the Strategic Growth Council, and we're honored as an Office of Health Equity to have that team of thought leaders who's helping to facilitate and really drive the agenda. And what we want our partners to do, education, transportation, social services, is really when you create policy, when you make decisions, when you're allocating funding, look through a lens of health equity, of health and health equity, because these are aligned with the social determinants of health, and we spent a lot of time getting these entities to really understand that because you're in transportation, that doesn't mean, you know, the decisions you're making are disconnected from health. All of this drives our ability to go upstream and really to transform and change systems. This gives you some additional background on how our Health and All Policies Task Force was created. We have a lot of literature that we can share in this space, and we're really excited about Health and All Policies being the theme next year in Chicago, so we'll be here in full force. If you have any additional questions, make sure you connect with Meredith after this session. But at the end of the day, this is, you know, what it's all about. How do we get flat? If you notice on the left-hand side, the stair steps I showed you, that's equality because, yeah, we're in America and we have kind of equal opportunities to get care and things of that nature. But you still see the stair steps, right? Equity is about what you see on the right-hand side. So the World Series was a few weeks ago, you know, and everybody can have admission to the ball game, but your quality of the experience is going to be different. We don't want that. If we get flat, whether you're the shorter man, or the shorter woman, or the taller man, or the taller woman, our experience is going to be far more equitable. And we believe that as we implement our plan and sustain it over an extended period of time, beyond my tenure, that we will achieve health equity in the state of California. So I know I went over the last 5 minutes, but I am done.